Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. 4th of July deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, including the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator, featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Now's the perfect time to upgrade your home with top Samsung appliances and hot 4th of July savings at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Cabin on 360, a conversation with Dennis Estlock and Ryan Jones. The Cabin on 360 in Mechanicsville, Virginia is not just any ordinary haunt. It stands as a silent witness to three brutal Civil War battles, its grounds echoing with the restless spirits of fallen soldiers. But the eerie happenings don't stop there. The neighboring ranch home, the site of a gruesome murder between half-siblings, raises unsettling questions. Did something within the walls of the home drive this brutal act? And does its dark influence continue to affect those who dare to enter? As we uncover the spine-chilling stories tied to this location, we'll explore the sinister energy believed to be fueling a dark and oppressive entity on the property. This presence has reportedly driven even seasoned paranormal investigators to flee in terror. From the shadowy secrets of the old rancher's basement to the intelligent responses of unseen entities, The Cabin on 360 holds many mysteries waiting to be uncovered. Today on The Grave Talks, The Cabin on 360, a conversation with Dennis Estlock and Ryan Jones. And Ryan, I'll start with you. You have a family connection to The Cabin on 360.
Yes. My grandfather bought the property back in the late 70s. Is still in the ownership of the Jones Realty. That's my dad's company now. So my family owns the property that the Cabin on 360 is on.
Now, does your family own the cabin and the ranch house next door?
Yes, the rancher was on the property when they bought it, and then they actually built the log cabin in 1982. My grandfather built log homes for a little bit in the early 80s, and they built the log cabin as a model home for people to come in and look at the inside of the house and see if it's something they'd want to, you know, build for themselves. Basically, you buy a piece of land and then they'll build the log cabin exactly like the one.
Yes,
yeah, so Mechanicsville.
So the model home, model cabin.
Yeah, so there are probably several other log cabins that look a lot like the one we have when people decided to actually, you know, buy one.
Now, Dennis, what is your involvement with the cabin and the property?
Well, I had formed Commonwealth Researchers of the Paranormal prior to actually investigating and having interaction with the cabin. And Ryan was one of my team members. And with his family having owned this property, he kept telling me that, you know, we need to go check it out. We can, if nothing else, we'll use it as just kind of a training ground, see who works well with who, try different techniques and so forth. So it was intended to be, for lack of better terms, a lab. And it turned out to be so active that we're like, man, we got to let other teams come in and validate some of the stuff that we've seen, heard, and had happen. And it just grew from there.
Now, had you been involved with the paranormal for quite a while? Is this something that goes way back?
So we've been doing the cabin, what I think about 8 years. And I've been in the paranormal for the better part of my life. My first interaction with spirit, I was 7, and I'm 50, something like that today.
Wait, you cut out right there.
What? No.
I thought I heard you say you're 45 today.
Yeah. Plus some.
So, but
yeah, so I've been in it most of my life and doing, you know, fairly heavy paranormal investigating for the better part of 20 plus years. So it worked well to be able to go in and go, okay, well, we've got these two empty locations. We can, you know, set up, use them as a test lab. And it took Ryan probably a year to talk me into going into them, because I'm thinking it's just this little mundane looking log cabin on the side of the highway and a little brick rancher.
Little did you know.
Yeah. I have some abilities, and Ryan will tell you what I said 3 steps into the brick rancher on day one.
Ryan, what did he say?
There's something in this house that's not human and never has been.
Oh.
This place is effed up. And that was my exact words.
Wow.
And then as the tour continued, we're standing in the basement, just kind of looking around, and we heard a scream through the house, like a female scream that echoed. And both of us stopped and looked at each other and went, where the hell did that come from? We ran outside to look around, make sure there's no kids on the property, no women around or any. There was nothing. And then, you know, the realization that it was inside the house. And it's like, we need to investigate here a lot.
You know, we never heard that scream again after. I don't know if anybody else has heard it, but, you know, I think that was just for us at that moment.
Yeah.
Because it was too much
loud.
To be a
it was audible.
Yeah.
You know, it was not an EVP. This was definitely an audible scream that just reverberated through the whole house.
Whatever was in there wanted our attention and wanted us to be there.
And almost like to draw you in.
Yeah.
Because it knew why you were there.
Yeah, it's too much to be a coincidence.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we had to be at the right place at the right. No. It was just that moment we were there. She saw us and she knew that we were the people that needed to be in that house.
Now, Ryan, with your family and building that property in the 80s, I'm going to guess you've spent a lot of time in the cabin.
No.
You hadn't.
No, I didn't. I did not. Every once in a while, I'd run out there when there was a salon or something to go pick up a rent check from the people who were working out there, but never spent any time out there. I did spend some time at the Brick Rancher. Like, I would go there. This is way before I started doing this. I would go to whenever the rancher would flood, if it would rain, the sump pump would stop working, and the basement would flood. They'd send me down there with a shop vac to clean out the water in the basement. And I knew the story of what happened. But I wasn't really into the paranormal like back then. And I didn't know it was haunted. So I'd basically go down there and I would say something like, you know, don't, you know, I'm just here to do my job. You know, please don't bother me, stuff like that. Cause I don't want to take a chance of there actually being something and then it following me home.
Yeah.
because again, I wasn't into it. Didn't understand it, and I didn't want to take a risk. So I was like, I'll be on the safe side. I'll just, you know, explain myself, and hopefully they'll leave me alone, which they did. You know, I didn't really realize he was even haunted until I told a previous team. I was a part of Austin Paranormal Society, and I told the leader, Howie O'Dell, about the cabin. This is before I took Dennis out there. We set up an investigation. Again, we're going to use that as a training ground for new members. And we had set up an investigation out there. And I told Howie, I'm like, look, I don't know this place is haunted. I know there was a murder in the house, so there could be something. I've never had an experience out there. I was completely honest. I never had experience out there, but worst comes to worst, we'll use that as a training place for new members. So the night that we were supposed to go out or supposed to have an investigation, I had a family dinner I had to go to. So I had to, you know, bug out early. And I messaged Howie, and I was like, how'd the investigation go? And he basically said that they were in there for like 2 hours and had to pull the team because of all the stuff that started happening. Someone got scratched. One of the mediums started crying out of nowhere. Howie said he saw blood on the walls in one of the rooms. It was just a whole bunch of stuff. And he was like, I had to pull the team because I did not feel safe. And that's when I knew that I had to get Dennis out there to see what he could do on previous investigations, where he would remote view and he could see like stuff. So I knew that I had to get him out there, and it took some convincing, and a lot of it was timing too, where we couldn't get in the house until, you know, when we actually got in there.
Had anybody else in the in your family ever talked about paranormal activity in there? Or was it, and it could be one of those things too, where people don't want to talk about it because if you talk about it, it's real. If you don't talk about it, it's not real.
I think my dad, he tolerates it for me. He lets us go in there and he lets us do these events and lets us rent out the cabin because he knows we do good with it. The property manager has said that she feels creepy in the Brick Rancher, which everyone who goes into the Brick Rancher has that kind of creepy feeling when they walk in there. You know, we, without us going in there and investigating and bringing it out, you know, it's not like we knew that it was going to be super active until we heard that scream. And then we're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Because we've mentioned the rancher next door, has anybody lived in that house since the murder? And I want to ask you to explain what happened, the history of the house. But has anybody lived in there kind of recently? Or has it just been empty?
Not long after the murder, it was zoned business. So it's been, you know, just business occupied since.
Okay.
We don't know of any other families that lived in there after the Elliots that were there when the murder occurred.
So would you talk about that? It's a horrific murder. It's really sad.
Yeah, it does have some heartstring pulling involved in it. So the morning of Friday, October 4th, 1979, we know that Mr. and Mrs. Elliott, Randy Lynn Elliott and Melissa Carroll Elliott, were tenants in the house. They were renting from Jones Construction and Realty. Randy was 17-year-old. Melissa was 12 years old. And somewhere between the hours of 7:30 a.m. when Mom and Dad left for work and 10:30 a.m. when Randy was seen carrying something out into the woodline by Jones employees, he had raped and murdered her in the house.
Mm.
Put two .38 caliber rounds in her chest, threw her body out the bedroom window, and then proceeded to pick her up from the backyard and carried her off into the woods to deposit her partially clothed body into a refrigerator box that was back by a trash pile, we're assuming. He then ran off into the woods. Obviously, the employees called back to the office. This was before cell phones, of course. So they called back to the office, either radio or however. Ryan's dad actually was the one that they contacted, told him what they saw, what they've discovered. One of the employees went to move the box and found her body. Sheriff's department was then called. Of course, you know, full investigation was put forth. There was a manhunt for Randy at that time. We do know that somewhere between a mile and mile and a half away, he had stolen a car. He was seen hopping fences in backyards that distance away. Vehicle was stolen, so they put an APB on the East Coast for him and found him in Lumberton, North Carolina, a few days later. He was held there for questioning. Hanover County Sheriff's Department sent down two detectives to interview him. He was then charged with her murder, along with smaller, I guess you would call them secondary crimes, like larceny, of course, the auto theft, etc. Did not fight being brought back here. Didn't disagree with the charges alleged against him. And he entered a plea agreement for life in prison without parole in lieu of the death penalty that they were seeking.
Do you think that there was anything going on, or would anyone even know if there was anything going on in the house before that event, or does the paranormal activity seem to have ramped up after that horrific event?
You know, there's something in the house that we'll talk about later, but there's something in the house that may have helped influence Randy on the day of the murder. There's something dark in the house that does have an effect on people who go into the Brick Rancher. And these are like investigators only there for like inside the house for an hour, maybe three at the most. But they'll come out angry at their fellow investigators
and everything else.
Yeah. And something they act like a totally different person. Now Randy lived in the house, and if he's constantly bombarded by the negative energy of whatever's in that house, if he gets angry at something and he's super angry and then something nudges him to do the unthinkable, you know, you got to take that into consideration.
Is that something that, you know, I know as paranormal investigators, you don't really want to skew someone's opinion before they go in and do an investigation, but that almost seems like you want to warn people.
Oh, we do. We tell them. We say, look, you know, it doesn't happen every time. So if you go in there and nothing happens and you feel like, I was fine, this is bullshit. No, it doesn't happen all the time. But you need to be aware that it does happen, because if it does, you'll know what to do and you won't freak out over it. We don't guarantee paranormal activity, because nobody can. But you've also got to be fair to let them know, say, hey, this is what happened to other people. Be on the lookout for changes.
My typical warning during orientation or the history and so forth for a team is, while you're down there, please pay attention to your personality and the personality of those that you came with. If you notice their personality is just a little off, or if you find yourself getting angry for no reason, take a break, step outside, take 5 minutes away. What is in the building is, I think, incapable of physical, like true physical harm. I mean, we've had, you know, people with light scratches and things like that, but, you know, like chairs being thrown or anything, you know, crazy like that, we haven't encountered. But what we have encountered are other investigators that get mad at absolutely no purpose. As investigators, we're pretty much all accustomed to our batteries getting drained, but that's a minor inconvenience. But if you look at your best friend and you kind of tell him, you know what, I think that dentist guy turned the orientations a little off his rocker, and they smile back at you and go, I'll eat your soul. You might want to get him out the building.
That's just a good idea. Do you think there's more than one entity in the house, or does it feel like just something pretty malevolent?
There are a few.
When you've done investigations in there, Dennis, what have you encountered?
I've had shadow figures, numerous EVPs, various different voices, different knocks and bangs. I mean, I left my voice recorder on the basement floor one night. I was the only one in the building. I had stepped outside to go have a cigarette. When I reviewed that audio, there was a very loud bang that sounds like someone just double-handed slammed a door shut. And then you hear a voice on there that goes, hey, hate. Just deep, breathy, gruff, very pronounced. And it was an empty building at that moment. I have an EVP where I was with a group. We were doing one of our fundraisers for a young lady that I think it was the one that we just did in April. No, it was at the end of last year. It might have been the toy drive. So we've done Toys for Tots now, what, Ryan, 7 years?
Yeah.
And I think it was the Toys for Tots. I had a group of 8 or 10 with me in the room. I'm leaned up against the windowsill in Melissa's bedroom, and I ask Melissa, are you with us, sweetheart? And there is a voice on the recorder right after me. Sounds like a young female that sounds like she is standing right beside me. Her voice is actually as loud as mine on the recorder, says, I'm with you. So that one kind of shook me to my core.
That shakes me too, because the one person I wouldn't want to still be there would be her. I wouldn't want her to be at peace someplace.
Exactly.
And I don't think you could find peace there.
No. I mean, I've tried to give her space. I did a cleansing and blessing on her room, and I sealed the doorway and the window with holy water, in hopes that nothing else comes into that room and gives her respite. That's her space. You know, and we've had people ask us, well, why don't you just do a blessing and cross her over? I'm not God. I can't make them go to the light. I'm not that powerful. And as far as the entity in the basement, when they ask, why don't you just cross it over, you know, do an exorcism on it? Well, there's a little secret here that, one, I don't know that it's demonic. And two, I don't know. Well, if you take all the books out of a library, you can't learn from a library. And he's like our little book. I'm learning every time we go out and every time teams go out, just what he's capable of doing.
And you did say at the beginning of this that the idea was to use this as a lab.
Yeah.
And so you're right. If you take out what you're there to study, you can't study what it is.
Yeah. Then it just becomes an old dilapidated building that's going to fall down. Whereas it is, I mean, it's not a dilapidated building now. But it will just become a derelict building that has no purpose if we take out all the books.
That's like going to any haunted location and be like, well, why don't you just exercise them or, you know, cross them over? The whole point of studying them is to learn about what happens after we die. If we just say, hey, okay, you guys can go now. What are we going to, like Dennis says, what are we going to learn?
Mm-hmm. Is it
kind of... destroy the paranormal field if there's nothing to study.
Right. Is it kind of interesting to talk to other investigators after they've been there and kind of compare notes? And do you frequently see some through lines in from what you've done and what they've done? Or some EVPs that are similar?
I noticed that a lot of teams have different experiences. But the fact that every team has a different experience is they're all kind of the same. You know, it's kind of like the fact that it's all different. It just kind of follows a thread of everyone just having their own kind of personal experiences. One team can go out there and be like, well, I was out there and the cabin was dead, but the woods were like super active. And then another team can go out there the next week and be like, oh man, the brick ranch was awesome. The cabin was great, but the woods were dead. The fact that we have three different locations means that we're going to have different teams having different experiences every time. And it's rare that a team goes out there and gets absolutely nothing. And even when they think they got nothing, they'll go home and they'll go over the evidence and they'll be like, holy shit, this happened. I didn't hear that when that, you know. And it's like, just because nothing happens while you're there, like substantial, doesn't mean that it was a complete bust.
And it seems to me, especially with the rancher, that since it can affect people, like make them angry, it seems like it would feed off of people's energy, the weaker people. You know, someone like Dennis and Ryan, I'm going to guess you as well, who have done this for a long time, and you have defenses and things that you can use to help prevent them from getting to you.
No.
Other people, maybe not.
I personally have never felt angry or anything when I was in the brick ranch. Dennis, on the other hand, has got a story.
Oh, let's hear that story.
Well, you tell John Harris's story with our VA paranormal, and then I'll tell my story, brother.
All right, man. So we have an investigator, John Harris. He's been investigating for, I don't know how long, 20, 30 years. And he came to help us out on one of our public investigations. He came there with his wife and his daughter. And they'd been investigating for a long time. They did several investigations. They were a part of several different teams. And they don't get spooked. You know, this is kind of like old hat for them. Well, they went into the brick rancher, and you know how when stuff starts going wrong, it starts piling up. Like the batteries would get drained, and the more stuff that would happen, the more frustrated John would get, which would, in the other place, it wouldn't bother him. But tonight, for some reason, it was pissing him off. So he was upstairs in, I think it was Randy's room. They're on the floor doing an EVP session. And one of the people that were there said, look, I don't know why, but I have this urge to point at you and go, ha, ha, ha. And she was like, I don't know why I want to do this. He was like, well, that's weird. And then they end up going downstairs to the basement. And the SLS camera, the battery drained and it went dead. And they just charged the batteries. Well, that
in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. And that's the straw that broke the camel's back, because his wife looked at him and said, look, we go through this stuff all the time. Don't let it get to you. And he said, I never wanted to hurt my family until that moment, and I wanted to punch her in the face.
Oh.
And that's when he gets up and walks out the door, comes over to the cabin where I am, busts through the door and said, where's Dennis? And I could tell he was upset about something. I'm like, he's in the woods. And then he abruptly turns around, walks out the door and slams the front door. So I follow him out because it's not normal for him. Follow him out. He's in the side yard on his knees crying. It's starting to rain. So I'm like, okay, I need to go. So I go and I run and I get Dennis and bring him back. And then Dennis grounds him and brings him back to, you know, where he's feeling more like himself. But yeah, so
does he remember? Does he remember the feeling?
He does.
Wow.
When I asked him that night what happened, he said that little son of a bitch got me.
Wow.
He got me, and he got me good, man. So
and he's seasoned, like
yeah,
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
as we said, we got to keep an eye out.
Yeah,
you don't know when it's going to happen.
Wow. So
I did a grounding and cleansing session on him and then took him back into the building and ordered his energy back. Whatever's in there found a target that I think John was probably the largest person in the group. John's a fairly large man. He's substantial size, not fat. He's just a husky man. And I think he was the one that could inflict the most damage physically on the group.
True.
So this thing went after him. So it's not a matter of it goes after the weak one. It's a matter of it goes after who can inflict the most harm.
Wow.
And we've seen that repeatedly. Now, my story, we were having a New Year's Eve party out in the cabin, and Ryan had his kids there. And a couple other teammates had kids there. We had friends and their kids, and we're watching Times Square on the TV. I'm sitting back in the corner drinking my coffee, and I'm laughing and having a good time watching the kids dance. And I just started getting mad out of nowhere for no purpose, no reason. And then I started having images in my head of drawing my weapon. I usually carry a firearm. But I just started having images in my head of drawing my weapon and starting to snap every one of them. And I got up and I told Ryan, I'll be back. I went next door and I threw the front door open and pardon my French, but I yelled at the house, all right, mother effer, we need to talk. And that house literally growled at me. So I went to the basement and I started making threats that I will bring my saints and my guides to bear and I will cross you over. I will send you into the light. I will have you destroyed. My God is stronger than you. And as I'm going off on it, Ryan came over to ask me if I was all right and what was going on. And I said, I'm just setting the record straight and letting it know it can't play with me anymore. And he says, okay, the house growled at me. I'll be next door.
Wow.
So, you know, it targeted me who has done this.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was 7, I had my first interaction with spirit. My grandfather stood and looked me eye to eye on the top bunk of my bed, told me goodbye. He loved me and he'd see me later. So I've dealt with spirit pretty much my whole life. When I was 16, my brother passed and he came to me immediately and told me goodbye. He loved me and he'd always have my back. I know his time of death. The coroner, when we got his death certificate back, the coroner's report validated my statement. And so this has been an ongoing thing as part of my life. So to walk into that house and have something that could play with my mind like that was a complete shock to me.
And I, you know, with the spirit of a grandfather or your brother, and I'm very sorry, I can't imagine losing a sibling. You know, that would be a loving presence to experience something like you did. That I think would really mess with my head. And how can you bring yourself to go back in there? You'd really have to do, I guess, pretty much what you did.
Yeah. It taught me a very valuable lesson on what to watch for in myself. You know, I'd been investigating for a long time, but I'd never come across an entity like that had that kind of power to where it could mess with your mind, play with your psyche. And it makes me wonder, and I'm not excusing what Randy did. Randy openly admits that, you know, he's a guilty man, but his statement was, you know, I'm here today as a guilty man, but I wasn't there that day. That house should have been burned down a long effing time ago. you know, that statement in itself says that he's acknowledging there's something wrong with the house. And I have to concur with him that there is something wrong with the house.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the cabin on 360 with Dennis Estlock and Ryan Jones. For more information, just search The Cabin on 360 on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, you'll get everything commercial free. You could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.